Rangers Podcast, the unofficial podcast by Texas Rangers fans for Texas Rangers fans. This is our fourth episode as the Texas Rangers continue their quest in the 2017 season. I am your host, Jeff. Let's go around the horn and meet the bros with us today. We're down one bro because it's his birthday, and that's Brett. So we gave him that. You know, most companies say, hey, you can take your birthday off. So as any upstanding organization, we did that. Let's go around to first base and meet Doug. Doug, fun week for the Rangers, man. How you feeling?
I'm feeling a little bit better. I wish that my company would give me my birthday off. I guess I missed that boat.
Maybe because I work at Toys R Us. It's just something that is specific to my job.
Yeah, I don't think they gave it to you off. I think it just let you go and you didn't understand the point.
Yeah, it was weird that I stopped getting paychecks after that. Totally unrelated, yeah. Though, I'm sure.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Now over to the hot corner and Blake. Blake, again, awesome week for the Texas Rangers, at least compared to some that we've had on the previous podcast.
Yeah, for real. This was an awesome week for the Texas Rangers. It's an up week for the year, for sure. I'm hoping that I play better in my intramural softball game than Pete Cosma's slid this past week. But
Pete Cosma's the type of guy, he would show up to like the intramural softball and your team would say, no, we'll just play a man down, thanks, though. We appreciate it. We'll take that automatic out in the lineup. All right, guys, if you have not listened to us before, thanks so much for checking us out. We'd like to start every episode off with our Rangers recap, which is where we run through what's happened the past week with the Texas Rangers. A little bit of an abbreviated version this week, as another one of those weird quirks in the Major League schedule happened where the Rangers actually had two off days in a four-day stretch. So not that many games to talk about. Four games already happened this week, and the fifth is going on right now, the series finale against the Nationals. So we'll start right off with it. The New York Mets came to Globe Life Park in Arlington to visit us, and the series had some ups and had some downs for the Rangers. The Tuesday game was an absolute shootout, a 10-8 win for the Rangers over Noah Syndergaard, and not a game I thought the Rangers would score a ton of runs in. Matt Busch didn't have his best up in the ninth, and Beltre re-aggravated that leg injury. This time it was actually his ankle instead of his calf in just his seventh game back of the season. But on the plus side, as we said, the offense showed up and the bats were rocking. Mazar was 4-for-5. Delino DeShields and Hoying combined to go 5-for-7 with four runs. And Austin Bebens-Dirks, the do-everything man for the Texas Rangers, got his first career win. So, Doug, normally we like to do the series, but because so much happened in that Tuesday game, what did you take away from that? And it was kind of a wild one that you just, even though we scored a ton of runs, you're like, maybe I should keep watching, because with our bullpen lately, you never know when things are going to get really interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. We were going against, I think, DeGrom in that first game.
I get my long-haired, right-handed Mets pitchers. Syndergaard's on the disabled list, so thank you.
But he had been throwing well, and the fact that we got eight runs on him, and then we kind of hit up some of their bullpen. It was kind of fun to see Neil Ramirez again. As he's a Met from the Rangers' good old days. But really what I took away from this game is what you just said. The fact that our center fielder and left fielder hit our the bottom of our lineup, was able to turn over well for Chu, who was 2-for-3 in that game, a couple walks. So it was encouraging to see our offense kind of get a spark and score at least one run in the first four innings for us.
Yeah, the Hoying thing is nice. He had that breakout game kind of when he first got called up, and he's one of the more fun kind of success stories of the Rangers player development to follow. So I was glad to see him get going. The average still isn't quite where you'd like it to be, but filling in for Gomez, I think he's been a pretty nice bright spot for the team and done an admirable job. Blake, what were your takeaways from the game? It was kind of we saw a lot of Matt Busch in the Mets series, and this was, I guess, the better of two outings, just because the second one that we'll get to in a second was rough. But the bullpen continues to kind of be like that crazy guy at your school who you never want to talk to because you don't know if he's going to be in a good mood or freak out on you. What were your thoughts on the Tuesday night game?
I was pretty happy with it. I think Mazara went 4-for-5. That was something that was good to see. I'm hoping that he can get settled in and be what we're hoping he can be out there in right field and end up being a leader for our club. I think Gallo had his 17th home run. So we're hitting a little bit better, putting up 10 runs on everything. You should win a game if you put 10 runs on the board.
Agreed.
So I'm glad it was a little bit too close for comfort, but it was nice to see the offense kind of come alive a little bit.
That Gallo home run was one of the highest hit home runs I think I've ever seen. in a Rangers game. It was like in the air for 7 seconds or something crazy like that.
Well, you know, with baseball trying to shorten some of the games, maybe they could just talk to Joey and try and keep those high-flying home runs a little bit lower, a little bit laser-like, save 5 or 6 seconds.
They should just have a clock on them, and if they're up in the air for X number of seconds, it's automatic out regardless of where it lands.
Play, yeah.
So that was the 10-8 win. On to the Wednesday game, which was a pretty frustrating one for Rangers fans, mainly because this is the type of game where I feel like, and I hate to encapsulate everything into just a few short innings, but I feel like good teams don't lose games the way the Rangers did Wednesday night. For the second straight night, Bush gave up the losing run. Chirinos had another big home run at the end of the game, 2-run blast in the bottom of the eighth before Bush gave up the run. Darvish pitched into the seventh, just did not get the run support he needed. But the play in question, I believe, took place, I don't know if it was the ninth inning or maybe the tenth, when Ruggie had that ball, kind of that back-spinning ball, hit out to second base and just spiked it in the ground. Elvis couldn't field it, and the go-ahead run scored for the Mets. So, Doug, we'll go to you first. One of those games where the bullpen again comes in, can't quite hold the lead, and the Rangers seem to shoot themselves in the foot in a situation where they battled back and clawed back. What were your thoughts on this, and then how frustrating was it for you to see, or just maybe not frustrating, but Matt Bush, a guy who we've said, hey, we're not worried about the past few weeks. Maybe now he was giving us some reasons to get a little nervous.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, Bush took the loss here. The night before, he had given up 3 runs. So although we won, I mean, we entered the ninth with a 10-5 lead and then quickly became a 10-8 lead before he got an out. So, yeah, Bush, maybe just some wear and tear on his body. But, I mean, that's really I think the kicker here was the call on the field when they said Elvis dropped the ball. I could see it going either way. As a Rangers fan,
yeah,
I said that he caught it, and then on the transfer he dropped it. But as an MLB fan, they got the call correct. So it was hard to lose that one, specifically because it was definitely one within our grasp, and it would have been good to sweep that 2-game series.
We'll get to the catchers a little bit later on in the show, but Blake, this is one of those games where I feel like the never ever quit hashtag that is, you know, so synonymous with this Rangers team ever since we've had Banny really came, you know, front and center. Basically the team, Zach Wheeler was dealing, but you just kind of had that feeling that the offense was going to keep plugging away, and Chirinos had the big hit. But what were your thoughts on this game? I think this is one of those instances where even when things go right for this team, you know, you still are nervous about the bullpen. And I know Bush didn't technically give up an earned run because of the play with Ruggie at second base, but he was credited with the loss. So any thoughts on Matt Bush or specifically the offense battling back?
I'm not as concerned with Matt Bush because, honestly, if that play's made, he doesn't end up giving up a run. I think less confidence than we had in the past. I think last week we probably would have entrusted him with all our hopes and dreams in the ninth inning. You know, we've got a little bit, I guess, more context on it. But, you know, I go back and forth on kind of the focus of the team because, you see, you know, we'll talk about the 6-3 win later on in the week. But that game really embodied some of the focus and never, ever quit that we're talking about. But every now and again, maybe it's just because I'm a Rangers fan, I watch a lot of games and I see a lot of our defensive plays. I feel like this happens with Elvis every now and again. Just some, maybe it's a small lack of focus or overconfidence or something, that something like this kind of happens. But that just might be because I watch a lot of baseball, and the one out of a million times that it happens, I'm like, again!
Yeah. Also, I think it needs to be said, Matt Reynolds, who was pinch running for the Mets, it was a great base running play on that, but he basically did like the kid in Little League who doesn't know that you should ever stop running on the bases, and he just kept running around third base. Obviously, there were 2 outs, but I think it was a heady play on his part, and I had kind of hoped when I saw Elvis bobble the ball that maybe he just stopped at third, but obviously that was not the case. So it was kind of an unfortunate way for that game to end. All right, on to some more bright spots. The Rangers had an off day Thursday because, I mean, they had played 2 games in a row. Jeez, they needed it. So then they travel to the nation's capital in Washington, D.C. and take on the Nationals, who, of course, have been awesome this year. The Friday game was a fun one. Andrew Cashner showed us again that we have no idea what we're going to get from him every night out, as he was dominant in this start. 7 innings pitched, 1 earned run. Matt Bush came in, nailed down the save. And this one, Luke Roy was 3-for-4 with a 3-run bomb. And that's a lot of bright spots from this team in the offense. Something that we'll talk about a little bit later when we get to our bold predictions, but Jurickson Profar actually played in this game for Adrian Beltre, who was still nursing that ankle injury. He went 0-for-5 with 2 strikeouts and is hitting .119 on the year, although he was crushing lefties in AAA, which was to a .442 clip, which is interesting because I believe in his career his reverse, he has a splits kind of reverse to that as a switch hitter. But a lot to take in from this game, Doug. Things set up kind of the way you want as a Rangers fan. Starting pitcher gives you 7 quality innings, offense comes up with some big hits, and then the bullpen nails it down. So a lot to take away from this one. What stood out to you?
Yeah, well, before specifically this game, it was encouraging to see that our bullpen didn't blow anything on Thursday, even with an off day. What really stood out to me, which this is something that is just few people would really look at, we have a guy in our bullpen named Alex Claudio who is just on fire. He's been thrown really well. He came into this game after Cashner went 7 innings, and whenever our starter goes out, I'm always a little bit worried on what's going to happen. And Claudio is one of those guys. I mean, we went Claudio, Kella, Bush. Those are probably the 3 guys I'm most confident in. And in fact, I was looking around and saw something that Buster Olney from ESPN tweeted, that the most efficient reliever this season has been Alex Claudio of the Rangers. He's thrown 12.7 pitches per inning and has a 2.05 ERA. And coming from a bullpen that doesn't have that statistic overall, it's encouraging to see Claudio continue to be lights for us.
It's funny. It just shows you how pitching is also so predicated on location, because if you took just purely based on stuff, everyone in the bullpen, I think far and away he has quote-unquote the worst stuff on the team. But because he can locate and has deception in his delivery, like you said, he's been just insanely effective for this team all year.
Absolutely.
Blake, we'll go to you. A lot happened in this game. The bats came alive. Luke Roy, it's nice to see him getting the cooking going. I feel like he's been in a bit of a power drought, so it was nice to see him club one out to left field. Andrew Cashner even had a hit, so is there anything he can't do? I mean, 5-tool player, right?
Right. He's actually hitting the best on our team right now with a .333 average, which I say we run him out there even more. Maybe we send Pete Cosma down. We have Cashner out there running the bases for us.
I mean, Banny should be fired if he can't get Cashner more at bats. The guy's batting .333. I totally agree with
for
you.
For real. He's a natural Madison Bumgarner. No, the one of the things that stuck out to me, if you're a Nationals fan, you got to feel kind of like you handed an advantage over to the Rangers with how many errors you had in this game. But we out-hit them. We stayed ahead the whole time. And to be able to, what I think at this point, the Nationals were leading the NL in wins,
yeah.
And this win for the Rangers knocked them out of that first place position. That's a pretty big deal, and I guess I feel like anybody can win just one game of baseball, maybe not anybody, but winning this one against the Nationals and then picking up one yesterday, and it looks like I think we're tied right now as we're on the pod with the Nationals right now, so that's got me feeling good. You know, it's just an emotional roller coaster. We win 10, we lose 5 in a row. You know, we lose a bunch that we should have won, and then, you know, we're putting the hurt on arguably the best team in the NL. So that's something to give a little hope.
Yeah, this game shows you what this team is capable of, which is always fun to see. And to your point, Tanner Roark, former Rangers prospect, went 6 innings, gave up 5 runs. Only 2 of them were earned, but I'm not going to feel bad for any team making mistakes, because we've given teams our fair share of games this year. And like you said before, as Ron Washington used to quote, that's how baseball goes. So if the other team is making mistakes, don't get in their way and don't stop them. On to the game yesterday, which was a wild one on Saturday. Rangers won 6-3 in 11 innings. And this is the type of game that I feel like we never win, which is a game on the road where we claw back in the 9th inning and then win it in extras specifically. So here, a lot to talk about. In the final 5 innings, the bullpen pitched incredible. They did not give up a run. They had 1 walk and 9 Ks. Robinson Chirinos did it again and continues the theme of these catchers just being so clutch for us with that 11-inning home run, which barely got out. And when I went back and rewatched the replay, didn't realize how close it was live. But that thing was like inches from being in the ballpark. Chu hit a huge home run in the 9th inning, which it's good to see him get going and get the power stroke back up. So this was another great win for the Rangers, and I think one thing that I was really relieved about was Martin Perez, after that batting practice outing that he pitched last time out against the Houston Astros, gave us five strong innings, two earned runs, and one of them was actually given up by Tony Barnetti from a base runner that he inherited. So, Doug, we'll go to you. A lot of positives here, especially from the bullpen, just putting up zeros to give this offense time to claw back. How happy were you to see the Rangers win a game in a little more unconventional fashion than we're used to seeing?
Yeah, absolutely. The bullpen was definitely a highlight. It was, I'll be honest, it was scary because the ninth, we were giving it away. They had, I think, a runner on third, no outs, something like that.
Yeah.
And we had to claw through that. Leclerc did a really good job. And offensively, something that I'm encouraged by is that Chu had, he was 1-for-4 with a walk, but he saw almost 30 pitches. And it's encouraging to see that in yesterday's game, we won 11 innings, but we saw 193 pitchers thrown by national pitchers. So it's encouraging to see our guys be a little bit more patient. We drew three walks, which is something that we need this team to do a little bit more of.
Definitely. I think that's one reason why the Chu contract look. I know all these huge deals usually end up looking bad the last few years, but I think one of his best skills and one that will age pretty well is his ability to work counts. So I'm hopeful that the next few years, assuming Shin-Chu Chu is still on this team, that's a skill set that I think does age pretty well and bodes well for this team down the stretch. Blake, we'll go to you. Tony Barnetti gave up the home run, but besides that, it was awesome, like Doug said, to see Leclerc come back and deal. Kella gave us two strong innings. And that play in the ninth with Alex Claudio was kind of a crazy one. I think it was Michael Taylor who was on third base. And I believe Trey Turner had a suicide squeeze bunt, or maybe it was Goodwin on third base. Either way, I don't know what the runner on third was doing because he broke for home and then stopped. And luckily Claudio was like, oh, hey, man. So I had this awkward exchange of eye contact. Like they were old high school sweethearts who saw each other in the grocery store 8 years after they broke up, and then he tagged him out. What were your thoughts on this game or maybe that specific play in general? I don't know if you got a chance to go back and rewatch
Claudio
it.
Claudio for Gold Glove at pitcher, man. I mean, just the defensive nimbleness that you got to have to be able to make that play is really pretty impressive.
Yeah.
No, I this was fun, man. It was like watching a game last year. You know, I feel like when we were down last year, I didn't really worry. You know, I just kept pounding back my sunflower seeds and got excited for the ninth inning or the eighth inning where we would come back. This year's been a little bit different story, almost the opposite story. So so it was fun to see the grit and see some of that come through. One of the things that's still pretty scary, though, is Odor struck out three times in some really pretty big spots that we needed him to come through. And he's so I think, you know, in the vein of what you're talking about with Chu and his patience, I think that's something that Odor's just going to have to learn. He's going to have to learn to be patient because it seems like after, you know, one of his, you know, his kind of breakout year, it seems like people either know how to pitch him better or he's having a little bit harder time seeing the ball or he's just not as focused. So he's just got some growing to do. Hopefully that can happen during the season and not have to wait till the off season. But that was something that was, struck out to me.
Oh, I see what you did. Very well done. Yeah, I mean, I don't think Odor is ever going to be the type of hitter Shin-Soo Chu is, but exactly like you said, there's ways to make him more patient. And Doug said we did such a good job of working counts. Guys like him, if he can just not get himself out as much with balls in the dirt, he just becomes such a more dangerous hitter and is more feared by opponents. So that was a fun game. I mean, we're in the nation's capital and we're winning games on the road, which is not something this team has done much. And Rangers baseball is fun again, guys. It's a good time. All right, on to Rangers Real Talk, our second segment, where basically this is the equivalent of our water cooler talk. What's the scuttlebutt, as Michael Scott used to say. So a couple highlights here, and then one low light, sadly, because Brett's not here, so we have to take one quick turn to negative town. But, Doug, you brought this up earlier. The catchers, and specifically Lou Croy, especially the past week, have been absolutely awesome. So in the past 7 days, 400 average, one home run, three bombs for Lou Croy. The OPS is 1155. It's weird to have a catcher who can call a game and start hitting better. And then Chirinos, who I think is one of the most underrated players in Major League Baseball and is probably like a super backup. He could probably start for a lot of teams. Two huge home runs this week and did an awesome job yesterday catching Martin Perez. What are your thoughts on the catchers and how awesome it's been to see their production come through and help this offense lately?
Yeah, it's something that I'm not used to. I mean, since Pudge, I haven't felt like we've had a catcher, specifically like Ducroy, who can handle not just calling a game, but managing base runners. That's something that Chirinos has also done a pretty good job on. Offensively, it's really encouraging, especially with how Ducroy started the year. And the past 7 days, as you said, 400, that big home run, and his on-base plus slugging is just exactly what we want it to be. So it's definitely really encouraging. Chirinos, I would agree. This isn't a bold prediction, but he might be a semi-focus of a trade. I think a team that needs a catcher that can hit offensively semi-consistently and can call a game pretty well has to be looking at Robinson Chirinos. Honestly, don't want him to be traded. I love that he's our backup. Gives Ducroy day off, knows our pitchers really well. But it's been really encouraging to see specifically that position start kind of heating up for the Texas Rangers.
It's interesting because of obviously what we gave up in terms of prospects last year to get Ducroy, but you can almost start to see the playing time becoming less and less disparate between Ducroy and Chirinos as Chirinos has been as productive as he's been. I don't know what his career high for at-bats is in a season, but if he ever got 450 at-bats, I think he could hit 20 home runs in a big league season if he stayed
healthy. Yeah, I would doubt it. And you see part of that come through as, Banning has started putting one of them at catcher and the other one at DH.
Yeah.
Which you don't see that happen because you risk giving up the DH spot if something goes down. So I definitely agree with you, and I think Banning has seen that as well as he's managing this team and this clubhouse.
Blake, we'll go to you. We have kind of a treasure trove of riches here, especially considering Brett Nicklaus at AAA has been raking. I think he's hitting over 340 last time I checked. And then obviously Jose Trevino, one of our top prospects at AA. So like Doug's saying, we have a bit of a logjam now. I know if we've talked before, if things go south and Ducroy is still this productive, he might actually be a nice trade asset, someone we could ship off on an expiring deal. So what are your thoughts on the catchers so far and then maybe how this position projects for the rest of the year and maybe even early next year?
Well, as far as plate appearances go, it's weird. I'm looking up some of his stats on the side here. It just doesn't feel like he's been with us since 2013.
Yeah, that's
he's been with us for 5 years, which is wild. He got 30 at-bats in 2013 and almost 338 at-bats in 2014. He hit 13 bombs.
Yeah.
Since then, it's kind of decreased, but I see him growing a lot. It's been fun to watch. We were talking even before the pod about Pete Cosma and his slide and how if you're Pete Cosma, you have to have the fundamentals down because you have to be ready to take advantage of the opportunities that are given you. And I feel like Chirinos is the opposite of Pete Cosma, where he really is looking for any opportunity to be able to seize that opportunity and make the most of it. And it seems like he's done that really pretty well this season.
Yeah, and from everything I've heard, too, Chirinos is like the man in the clubhouse. The team loves him. He's one of the leaders up there with Beltre. So to get to see him have more playing time and produce is awesome. And I think he's, like Doug was saying, he's a guy, if I'm another team in a pennant race and I need a guy who needs to be either like a 1A starter or a backup that can take on a heavier load than a lot of other backups, that's a guy I'm sure they're at least going to be calling and asking about. And JD's going to have to see if he can keep the willpower to hang on to him. Our next topic is Adrian Beltre. You guys heard of him? Is he good at sports? So it came back, what? After his calf injury earlier in the season, this dude is an absolute tank when he's on the field because he seemingly plays through every type of injury you can have. Had a really bad ankle sprain, was in a walking boot, and basically told the team, you're not allowed to put me on the disabled list. I forbid it. After watching Jerks and Profar go 0-for-5 with 2 Ks in the first game against the Nationals, he talked his way into the lineup yesterday. So we can sit here and, bring up Adrian Beltre's accolades. He's a Hall of Famer. He's an all-time great. But, Doug, we'll go to you because there's a lot of different, I think, factors here. Number one, what does he mean to this Rangers team when he's in the lineup? Number two, how nervous are you about these injuries nagging and going forward? And then number three, assuming he goes back on the disabled list, or gets re-injured again, what does this team do? Because we'll get to I'll give you my take a little bit later, but I'm not so sure if they have the confidence in Jurickson Profar that they need if there's an extended stint again on the disabled list for Adrian Beltre.
Yeah, all good questions. With Beltre, what he means to this team specifically on the field, I mean, I think it speaks for itself. You have a Gold Glover at third, and he's like 80 years old. And he's still playing on, I don't want to say in his prime, but pretty close to his prime. And so I think it almost goes without saying him on the field is better than anyone else at third base. Him, you know, even in the clubhouse, it's good for him to be with the team. I think his leadership speaks for itself. So all of that, I'm good to go. With was your second question, what happens if he gets hurt again?
Yeah, basically, what do you think this team does? Because I think Blake said this on the last pod, as much as we love Adrian Beltre, the reality is the human body breaks down, and he's kind of the case in point of that. He plays through as many injuries as he can, but I just don't know if it's realistic to expect to get the rest of the season from him on the active roster.
Yeah, as much as it's difficult for me, I have to trust Jeff Banister here. Banny has to know, hey, I'm dealing with a Gold Glover at third, but also someone who, as most of this season and most of last season, spent time on the DL and been hurt. So it's important to have him out there. I think I said this a couple weeks ago. More and more, I'm liking the mindset of Beltre being at least our primary DH, not our exclusive, but our primary DH. Then him being able to give some other guys an off day by him taking the field. The flip side of that is anyone who knows Adrian Beltre knows that he will not have that. There's going to be some talking to him to be able to make that happen. I think really what would have to happen is him get hurt again, need to go on the DL, and then have a frank conversation with our manager and our coaches and say, hey, how can I still contribute to this team and help this team by not being on the DL? Go from there.
Yeah, and I think the point about DHing him is a great one. The tough thing for Banny that he's going to have to navigate is where the other pieces fit in, because Rua, as much as I love him and his versatility, he's really struggled at the plate this year if you want to play him at first. Napoli's currently on the DL and hasn't exactly been a world beater when he's back, so Beltre needs to get those days off his feet, but how is Banny going to find a productive bat to plug in at first base? Blake, your thoughts on this? Obviously, Adrian Beltre plays through more pain than I've probably ever felt in my life. So for him to go on the disabled list, you know it's got to be something that is really, really going to inhibit his ability to play baseball. So what are your thoughts on what has happened so far this year for him? Obviously, this team was pumped to have him back and probably even more relieved that he didn't go on the DL. But who knows what it spells for the rest of the season for him?
Yeah, I feel like the last 3 years, maybe four, every time he's trying to beat out a slow roller to first base. Yeah, when Douglas and I were watching games together, we're like, don't pull a hammy, don't pull a hammy, don't pull a hammy. Or he's rounding third, you know, trying to get home, and third base holds him up, which I always appreciate, even if it's in a tight game, just because he is someone who's such a competitor and he does want to win. I think he's also aware of how much he means to the club, and he's not a guy that has a leadership role and doesn't really understand his role, a la Ian Kinsler in his last year or two here after Michael Young left.
Great point.
But he understands his role, so he knows how important it is to the team. I know one of the things he said recently about his ankle is that the pain is a lot less, the inflammation is less, and it kind of, you know, the injury almost looked worse in the beginning than it ended up being. But you never know. He commented that that he's not playing 100%. It's not that he's not 100% and playing, but he understands that there are risks every single day that you go out to play, that you could get hurt every single day, and he's trying to take care of himself while he's on the field by not playing 100% on the field to make sure that he can stay out there to help his team and be a good coach for them.
And the other weird thing, we were talking about this before the pod, so he has the bad ankle injury. He's in a walking boot. We're worried he's going to go on the DL. They call up Profar. I believe Alvarez got optioned as the corresponding roster moves, but we assumed that meant that there was a possibility he was going to get hurt. And then his first game back, he steals a base in. I was like, "What are you? Are you hurt or not, man?" Because he actually looked really good stealing the bag. What did you guys think when you saw that? I was like, "There's no way he just did that." Because it was almost a straight steal. It wasn't like the ball was in the dirt or like you can go.
No, first. Yeah, it's a coy move. It's a coy move. Heck, maybe the whole ankle thing was a big ruse for us to be distracted by, so that the opposing team would be like, "Oh, he's not going to steal. He's all hobbled up and broken," and then zip.
Matt, that's what he says as he runs.
I'll be honest, and I love Adrian Beltre and all that, but I think he forgot the count. I think he was running. he thought it was full count, two outs.
Yeah,
because he took off on first move, and we haven't seen Adrian Beltre do that in a long time. So I'm glad he got a stolen base, but I think it was because he lost count.
And I don't know if Wieters or Lobatone was behind the plate, but they got the ball down there. Like, it was a legitimate steal. It wasn't like everyone was so shocked that he went. Like when Brian McCann stole a base against us, and I feel like the earth stood still because everyone was so freaked out that it happened.
Yeah.
You guys know who else who's been awesome for this team is Delino DeShield. So our next topic in Rangers Real Talk is this guy who's been doing it from both the bottom and the top of the order. Delino's a guy that I think has really quietly had an awesome season for this team. So we all know the story. Excuse me. Rule 5 draft pick a few years ago for the Rangers out of Houston. Had an awesome debut season in 2015. Last year showed up to camp, bulked up, had really been lifting, and I think it hurt his performance on the field. He wasn't the speed threat that we had come accustomed to in 15. This year, trimmed down again, came in spring training awesome. Blake's favorite line that Kevin Millwood used to use was he was in the best shape of his life when he showed up. But the numbers here speak for themselves. 301 on the season with the batting average, and most importantly for him is the 359 on-base percentage. He's not trying to hit the ball out of the ballpark like he did last year, which is not his game. He's out there running. He looks good. He's healthy. He has some issues on defense, which, Doug, I know you'll probably touch on. But, Doug, we'll go to you. What are your thoughts on Delino DeShield and sort of the sleepy or quietly good season he's been having for the Rangers?
Yeah, I felt like he hasn't been having that great of a season, that he's been climbing up. He started off pretty rough, and I think we saw that by him, Rua, and Gomez kind of switching things out a little bit here and there. But once Didi really kind of solidified and got his hits in, he's been doing really well. I mean, just in the past seven days, he's played in five. I'm trying to think of some of those stats that he's been doing. I know that I was looking at this earlier. He's averaging over 500. I think he's
nice.
Nine hits, like 16 at bats. He hasn't got caught stealing. His strikeouts have been low. It's encouraging to see him really kind of get into his groove. And, I mean, the past, I think, 30 days, he's hitting .388. And when you look at, you know, it's hard to keep a 500 average over the season. But a month time, especially in the heat of the summer, hitting .388 is big.
And he gives this team an element that we really don't have. I know Elvis might lead the team in stolen bases, but Delino DeShields is legitimately a huge speed threat that no one else on the roster is. So even if he's not starting, he's a nice late-inning weapon to have for the team. Blake, what are your thoughts? This is a guy who, again, had that huge season in 15. Last year, I think maybe we thought that we got the Delino DeShields that everyone had sort of thought, which is a little bit in between what he was in 15 and kind of the production last year. So what are your thoughts on him? He's been a real bright spot for this team, and I know the at-bats have been a little inconsistent just because of how many moving pieces there have been in the outfield, but I think it's been fun to see this guy kind of take off and refine that form from 2 years ago.
Yeah, I really hope that he is starting to round out. I love watching him on the bases. I think he's really aggressive and just fast. I mean, he's not Craig Gentry fast, but he's a speedy dude. I think he's probably, the way that he's playing, he's sitting pretty to take a lot of at-bats probably away from Ryan Rua while Napoli is on the DL, but he's really been, you know, taking advantage of opportunities that have been put in front of him, and it's fun to see. I'm hoping that he can kind of round out to a center fielder of the future for us.
One other last topic here in Rangers Real Talk is a little bit more of a negative one, and that is Tyson Ross, who of course was one of the offseason signings of the Texas Rangers to help bolster the rotation. He was coming off thoracic outlet surgery in the offseason when the Rangers picked him up, so they knew that early July, late June was probably the immediate target date for him. And guys, let's just be blunt about it. He has gotten absolutely bombed in his rehab starts. Now, I know a lot of people take these with a grain of salt. Roy Oswalt had all the lines like, well, I'm just here to work on stuff when he was coming up with the Texas Rangers, but we remember how that translated. Basically, he has not been able to get guys out consistently, and as Doug pointed out, I think, on the last podcast, the ball-to-strike ratio has been horrible. So his last start in AAA, he gave up back-to-back-to-back home runs in the first inning. He gave up 6 runs total. So the question has to be asked. AJ Griffin, we found out after doing a little bit of research before the pod, is not on track to return until mid-July. I think Hamels is about the same. Austin Bebens-Dirks is currently in the rotation, but I think the team would prefer to have him as a long man in this bullpen and who can eat up some innings in case the starter gets in trouble. So, Doug, what do we do here with Tyson Ross? If and when he's ready to be activated, which it seems like this next coming week it's going to happen, how short is his leash, and then what do you think this rotation looks like going forward if he does struggle like he has been in the minor leagues?
Yeah, I mean, in the minors, I agree that a lot of pitchers do say, you know, I'm just trying to work on my timing and stuff. But right now, his timing is giving him a 7.71 ERA, which sounds like it's about average on the rest of our pitchers on the major league level. In 4 outings, he's only been in the last 18 innings. He's given up 26 hits, all earned runs.
Jeez.
And really, one of my biggest fears is that he would add to his statistics I don't enjoy with the Texas Rangers right now is that he's given up 11 walks in 18 innings, and that's not something we can't give up those free passes. So,
yeah.
If the Rangers want to activate him and get him a start against Seattle, which projected to be Saturday or Sunday, then it'll be interesting to see. I do think his leash has to be pretty short, depending on how our bullpen is taxed around that time. Right now, with how he's coming back from this rehab step, it looks like if the thread starts to unwind, it unwinds really quickly.
Yeah.
So I think moving forward, if he can solidify the rotation and stay in there, great. I definitely do think it would bring Austin Bebens-Dirks back into the long man role, or Dylan Gee, kind of finding a different spot for him. But really, I see not much changing when he gets activated, at least for his first 4 or 5 outings, to see how major league hitters attack him.
Do you guys know if Dylan Gee is still on the active roster? It was a move made after his start against the Mets, because I was trying to think if Ross is in fact going to start this next weekend, whose rotation spot will he take? But Blake, we'll go to you real quick. It kind of sucks, I think, that Tyson Ross is healthy at a time where the Rangers do have some banged-up starters in A.J. Griffin and Cole Hamels, because especially with the deal we gave him this offseason, I know it's a one-year deal, low commitment, but this is a guy they were depending on for innings, and it's just not looking like he is the Tyson Ross of old. So what are your thoughts on whether he should be activated and sent to this rotation? And then let's assume that we get maybe not as bad as he's been in minor league starts, but pretty close to that. What does the team do? I mean, we can't, especially if we're still hoping to maybe be in contention for the wild card, we can't afford to run a dude out there every fifth day that's going to give you no chance to win.
Yeah. It seems like everything that I'm reading says that he's going to join the team tomorrow and be called up on tomorrow. Banny said that the number one factor in that decision process was that he'd be healthy, and, quote, all indications are that he's healthy. Maybe they see something that we don't see. Maybe I have no idea how. I mean, his last outing, he faced 27 batters and gave up 10 hits and a walk and hit 2 batters.
I mean, well, that was their fault. They were crowding the plate.
Right. Yeah. I don't know if there was some bad blood between that with that team or not, but hitting 2 batters, that's a lot of control. And as we were talking about earlier, a la, you know, Alex Claudio, a lot of pitching is control. And if he doesn't have it, either one, he's going to walk a bunch of people, or he's just going to serve up this sweet meatball right in the middle of the plate and it's going to get tanked. So yeah. I'm not thrilled about him joining the club. I would rather us just keep our club the way that it is and let him figure it out down there, because we don't need another Sam Dyson. We've already experienced that, and we're all trying to work through the counseling that it takes to get through that kind of
Yeah, it hasn't been encouraging. This is a guy, I mean, 2 years ago with San Diego, who was a legitimate top of the rotation starter. So I get the allure, especially when the team originally signed him. But thoracic outlet syndrome surgery is serious. I believe they take one of your ribs out, and it's like, obviously, if you're a pitcher, kind of the torque that your body has. Like, I'm no surgeon anymore. That's a whole different story. But it's not something that you're guaranteed to come back fully healthy from. I know we've had a couple pitchers have that injury before. So we'll see, man. I mean, I wish that the rotation was in a better spot in terms of having some more options. But again, if it's him or Dylan G, I get the thinking behind the club where let's just roll with Tyson Ross and see what we got, because he's done it in the past and been successful. All right, on to our last segment, and this is a new one, and I think it's going to be a fun one going week to week, and that is our Rangers Crystal Ball, where we're going to make a bold prediction for the next week, and then obviously on the next episode we will tell you how right or how wrong we were. So we'll just go right around the horn. We'll go in reverse order as we've been going. Blake, why don't you get us started? What is your bold prediction in the next week of Rangers baseball, and how excited should I be to point out how wrong you will be next week?
My my bold prediction and also my prayer is Rougned Odor gets back on track with the Astros series, hitting over 400 with two bombs. I think he starts to realize some of the patience issues that he's having, and that he doesn't have to swing for the fences every single time. And part of that comes from him realizing the first series is over with the Astros. They absolutely destroyed us. And he can, instead of trying to play the hero in every at-bat, he realizes he has a different position of leadership on the team, and he starts experiencing that and kind of owning that in the Astros series. So that's my prediction for the week.
That would be awesome, and I really hope that happens. Doug, we'll go to you. What's your Rangers bold prediction for this upcoming week?
Yeah, I think the Rangers will gain 4 games in the AL West standings this week. So currently we're 14 games back. I think we can jump up to 10.
Yeah.
We have the series against Houston. We have an off day on Thursday, and then series against Seattle. And I believe that after Houston is done with us, they go to Boston and play Boston. So I think that as the Rangers, I mean, the current team, the Rangers, the way they're playing now is different than the way that we played Houston in the first 6 games that we played so far. So I definitely think that we'll be able to hit well. I like our pitching matchups, and I'm excited to see us be 10 games back and be much more in the mix of the wild card than I think currently we're 2.5 games out.
Nice. Let's hope that the Astros somehow get Chris Sale in that Boston Red Sox series. That would be nice. My bold prediction is not one that I'm happy to make, but I just think it needs to be said. And I could be wrong even within the hour as we're playing the Nationals, but I think Jerickson Profar has hit his last at-bat at the big league level for the Texas Rangers. And my thinking behind this is twofold. Obviously, Profar has really, really struggled this year, while Drew Robinson, a guy who, no, did not have the same trajectory as a prospect through the system, or was not as heralded as Profar, essentially has the same skill set and position versatility, and has been raking. And with Beltre not going on the disabled list, and us basically saying, hey, you're good enough on one leg, and probably a more viable option than Jerickson, I think we need to make a move for a bullpen arm this week, just because he's an extra body on the team. And I think the next time the call happens, it's not going to be for Profar. Regardless of how well he's been at AAA, he's had a really weird and unconventional prospect journey. Obviously, he missed 2 full years with the shoulder injury. But I just think that maybe this is a guy who's one of those change of scenery candidates that we talked about before, and it's just his role on the big league team is not there. Doug?
Yeah, I like hearing you say that. It's interesting. I wonder if you're going to be right or wrong. One thing that, I know this is one of the first times that we're doing this Rangers Crystal Ball, but I think back a couple of weeks ago, I made another bold prediction that the Rangers were going to trade and get a guy named Strickland from the Giants, and I think I was half right, because we traded Sam Preston to the Giants for a player to be named later. Might not get Hunter Strickland, but I want to say thanks to Sam Dyson for all the work that he put in, and I look forward to see the player can be named later and the way that that player impacts our club.
Yeah, I actually saw a really funny tweet the other day, and I was hoping that people wouldn't know it was a joke, but when the trade was announced and it said for a player to be named later or cash, someone tweeted, "We're getting Posey."
Yes.
Which I thought, and I wanted to click on the mentions and have somebody be like, "Wait, really?" Just because there's always someone like that on the internet who doesn't realize sarcasm. That's a good one to close on, guys. Another great episode, great week of Rangers baseball, and the game's going pretty well now. We're tied with the Nationals in the fifth inning. For everyone around the horn here, Doug and Blake, I'm your host, Jeff. Thank you so much for checking us out. Be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us a review if you can. Let us know how we're doing. Shoot us an email, therangerspodcast@gmail.com. And be sure to follow us on Twitter, @RangersPod. Give us all your thoughts, tweet us your questions. We'll give you a shout-out next week. Thanks, everybody, for checking us out, and go Rangers.